Hello. Do you understand me? Well, it's nice to meet you. Yes, I am excited to speak with you. This is the direction English Arrow shoots you. English conversation that will take you places. James Levin and I had a great conversation about his vision. You'll enjoy the conversation. More people helping people to advance and enjoy life. That's what we're talking about. Let's go. Back with voices of my brothers, sisters, and people. Welcome back. I took a short hiatus, and I'm glad to be back. And I'm glad one of the first voices that I get to share with me today is a person I've known for probably 4 years, I think, now, and I'm grateful for knowing him. We both met at a really, really great place in life, and we've continued on. My friend here, James Levin, he is the founder and owner of English Arrow. He has some great stuff that he's about to give you today, but no person can introduce themselves like themselves. So James, welcome, and I'll let you have the floor.
Hey, Lou. It's nice to be here. 4 years. Can you believe that? Really goes by fast. So yeah, I'm James, and 2 years ago I decided to start my own company and focus on helping business professionals whose first language is something other than English to, you know, practice communicating with confidence and getting ahead in their careers. And that's what I do. I live here in Colombia. It's a nice place to be.
So now, what was your motivation because to come to Colombia? Because I remember when I met you, we met on the street, even though we were in the same program. Then obviously we did other sort of organized things together. But my reasoning for coming here was to learn Spanish. And I'm being honest about that. I knew I was going to teach, but I wanted to learn Spanish. What was your reason? What was your motivation for coming to Colombia?
Hey, you know, it's a little funny. My first experience teaching abroad, I went to Thailand because, you know, Thailand has this allure for the post-college, youths, as I was. And, yeah, everyone seems to go there. So I went there and I just wasn't happy. You know, I kind of hated it there. I was in a very rural area. It was very difficult for me to communicate and eat and get around. So I went on a backpacking trip after that, and I arrived home, and I told myself I was going to stay home at my parents' home again for about 6 months and find out what my options were. And then after 3 months, I was going crazy. So I saw an opportunity to go to Colombia. You know, it's an advertisement that said, come teach in Colombia. And I signed up, and the next week I was ready to go. Of course, they delayed the start date 2 times, but sure, you remember those days too.
I do. So, but yeah, and you're from Philly, right?
Yeah, suburbs. I grew up outside of the city.
And so, like, what's the? You said I can understand when you were in Thailand, you were like, well, you know, it's rural, and I'm not really feeling this because I'm originally from New York City. I'm from Brooklyn, and so going to sort of rural type places are really like unattractive if it's a long term thing. So what made Colombia attractive as opposed to what you saw in Thailand?
Yeah, I think the major difference was there were enough English speakers, you know, enough people already here when I arrived in Colombia that it was easy to feel, you know, part of a group. It was easy to find friends who introduced you to their Colombian friends and different activities. Where in Thailand, I'm not even exaggerating. I think I would have to drive at least 30 minutes to find another native English speaker.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I always like to say, if you went to the middle of nowhere, Thailand, and drove another hour, that's where I was.
But it was a memorable experience still, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I got a lot out of it. Originally, when I went to teach English abroad, it was kind of a break for me before I went to work in my degree, which was journalism. But I enjoyed the teaching part enough that I wanted to keep exploring that idea. So I definitely got a lot out of it, but it just wasn't the right place for me at that time.
So what drew you to teaching? Because you said you studied journalism, which is obviously a noble career, but it also requires you to know the English language pretty well. But what drew you to teaching?
It was something new. I mean, at first, I'm not going to lie, like, it was a means to travel. So I wanted to go live somewhere else before I did anything else, and teaching was an easy way to do that. I didn't really know what I was getting into, as I'm sure many first-time foreign language teachers could tell you. But I enjoyed it. I really had a great time. And as I went on in my journey, I discovered the type of people that I could help most effectively. And that's when I really became passionate about this kind of education.
So tell me, like, what sort of created that bridge for you to go from, okay, I'm going to teach in this program, to, you know what, I'm going to do it myself? Because English Arrow was born, but obviously English Arrow was after you kind of got your feet wet doing it on your own. So what was the thing that kind of led you to do that?
Well, I started getting a lot of people who came to me about job interviews. I was using some third-party sites, some marketplace sites, and I noticed I was attracting a particular type of client. So I figured, you know, why not kind of create my own site where I can, you know, market directly to this client who I've had a lot of success helping and who seemed to enjoy learning with me, and yeah, go from there. And I made a lot of evolutions. At the beginning, I still offered test preparation also, but now I really focus on professionals.
And so you said one of your things was to help people. So what experiences in your life have helped you the most to help English learners? Because we're going to talk about your company in just a minute. But what's one thing maybe that you think, man, this thing really helped me to help someone else?
Yeah, I mean, long before I moved abroad, I had been lucky enough to travel to many different countries. And making connections with just so many different people from so many different places was eye-opening, you know, empowering. It was so cool to learn about different cultures and about different people and about different struggles, right? Wherever you go, everyone has both unique struggles and the same struggles, right? And that's what we can talk about more when we move into kind of the professional world. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're from Brazil or China or Thailand, you getting into the professional world, communicating in these big organizations are common challenges that many people have.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about it is sort of the fact that you were in Asia, then you came to South America. You really got a good dynamic of almost, I wouldn't call them polar opposites, but big different poles, and you being sort of in the middle where you know English, you speak English. And so I think you probably got a really good perspective of just the general idea of the learner. So what is English Arrow? Now, I know what it is, and I'm intrigued by it, but what is English Arrow, and where did it come from?
Yeah, English Arrow is a service that helps motivated professionals to achieve their career goals using English. So honestly, when I started, I was focusing more on the language, but now I've evolved so many times. Really now I focus on communication and communication skills, but we use English because that's where these people need to build their confidence.
You know, and the thing is, I get that, and I'm curious because I think because you've been teaching online for some time now, I think you have another dynamic that can help people out a lot, and that's how to, you know, sort of manage online communication, because obviously your business is online before the your business was online before the pandemic. So what do you think are some of the skills that are most vital for people to communicate well online, and how have you sort of used English Arrow to model that for people?
Yeah, and we'll talk about those skills, not just online, but in any situation. A lot of the people who are coming to me through these marketplace sites, everyone wants like English classes, but these guys are speaking to you, you know, so well. Sometimes I have clients who are asking me the difference between, yeah, you know, two small things that I couldn't even tell them, right? So I tell them, like, we don't just need English classes at this point. We need to improve our communication skills. And that is what kind of helped me make that evolution. So it's not just about the language. And that realization helped me get to where I am. And to get to your question, you know, what communication skills should we be focusing on? The number one that I try to express to people is storytelling.
Now, you know, the thing that I think is really great about storytelling, and I might be segueing a little early before I want to, but I am proud of you, and I want to give you sort of all the plaudits, because you wrote a book, right? And your book, which is titled Interview in English, Get Your Dream Job in the English-Speaking Workplace. Now, what motivated you to enter the sort of literature world? And is your book fiction, nonfiction, a bit of both?
Well, I certainly wouldn't call it literature. You know, it's definitely a guide, definitely more of a step-by-step guide, right? And yeah, I mean, I wrote that because I didn't really think there was, well, I didn't find anything similar that was already out there. You know, you pick up an English interview book, you know, for English learners or non-native English speakers, as I prefer to say, and it's like, you know, very obvious information. It's very much, oh, here's some grammar structures you should use. It's very technical. And I wanted to write something that recognized that these were professionals, right? Maybe they don't have the same confidence as you or I in English, but they can communicate in English. And what they really need is how to interview with a little bit of help on the English, not a lot of help on the English, but a little bit on how to interview, right?
And you know, the thing that I think is really interesting is I think your book would help native speakers, because being interviewing in general is a sort of a stress-inducing moment, because there's the pressure of self-induced, I think, but there's the pressure of wanting to perform your best, but also going into the unknown and trying to impress on someone that you believe you are the best person for what they're offering. And so just imagine if you're a non-native speaker and you're in that moment, because I already know native speakers have issues. So I think your guide is something that I would even dare say native speakers, it would be worth them looking at, just to sort of feel that confidence and have a different perspective.
And that's the other gap, you know, I try to fill. Like, I definitely think that my book would be valuable to native speakers, but in that side of things, there are so many books, you know, that offer interview advice to native speakers. But I've read through some of them, and they're so inaccessible that they're just filled with expressions and jargon. And so I wanted to kind of bridge that gap between, here's some great advice, and here's some great advice you won't have to stop every two sentences to read. So it's really kind of making that, you know, that generally accepted advice accessible to non-native speakers, using some of my own stories in there from my clients, and helping them realize that English being your second language is not an insurmountable object. And it's something I say right at the beginning. I say, you're going to this interview, you're not being judged on your English. You're being judged on your ability to do that job.
Right. And you mentioned it a little bit. So that's another great segue. So what are some of the success stories that you have had happen that sort of helped you write the book, and some of the success stories that you just find to be good in general? for yourself, sort of motivating you to push forward with your company?
Yeah, I mean, I've had enough successes to, you know, I've learned a lot with each different success and some failures. You know, not everyone who trains with me gets the job. Sometimes it's more that I could have done, and sometimes there's not really more I could have done, right? But I've had enough successes to keep going. And what kind of pushed me to write the book is I realized I was having a lot of the same conversations with a lot of these clients, right? So a non-native speaker comes to you, and we can spend an hour just talking about the barrier, the mental block between English and their, you know, between their thoughts in their heads and their thoughts that they speak out loud. And so I just said, you know, I'm going to put this in a book, because this is one example, but there are so many. And hopefully then people will read it, and then they'll come to me, and we can focus on practice. We can focus on, you know, taking good answers and making them just a little bit stronger.
No, and I think that's something else you do, because, again, since I know you, another thing that I want to give you kudos for, and we'll talk about how you move to and adjust for the period. While you are in Colombia, you started a conversation group. It was face-to-face at first, and you would have conversation groups face-to-face, and obviously in the midst of world situations, you adjusted, and you've adjusted, and now you have an online conversation group. Now, I just want to preface it with, I think some of the ideas that you come up with are absolutely brilliant, but I want you to give a little more information about your conversation group and what led you to do that and what made you push it online and just grow it the way it's been growing.
Sure. So yeah, a bit of a long story with that. I started a conversation group about like 3 years ago when I was teaching in Sena, which is the local technical school, we can call it, right? And we had to, as a project, we had to do some sort of cultural activity. So I started it as a literature club, actually. And I would introduce short stories from international authors. I would try to get a mix, because it's always been important to me to include other perspectives, to include, you know, a wider view. And when that program was canceled, so I stopped teaching there, you know, even 2 years later, someone would see me on the street and be like, James, when are we going to start the club again? Right. So it was a format that people really enjoyed. So it was on my mind, but one day I noticed a new restaurant opened two blocks away from our house. And so on a whim, I walked in and said, because they were marketing themselves as restaurant and house of culture, basically, I said, hey, how about I host an English club here? And it started a great partnership and a great friendship, actually. And we had our club there successfully for a couple months.
That's awesome. So then what happened to make you say, okay, well, I'm going to put this online? What was the reasoning for that? Because, I mean, obviously the recent things that have happened have forced it to be online, but what made you do that sort of before that, or prepare yourself for that before that time?
Yeah, it would have been easy to, you know, just stop for a while, but I think it became clear pretty early on that this, you know, it wouldn't be a good idea to hold an in-person club for probably the rest of the year. So I decided to take a chance and try it online. I already had a WhatsApp group with, you know, 100 or so people who had attended over the 8 months we had done it in person. And so I took a chance, and, you know, the first club, there were just a few people there. The second club, I started inviting some of my clients from Brazil and Korea and other countries, and by the third or fourth club, we had a really strong group. We were starting to reach some new people, and it became clear that it was going to be, it had the potential to be pretty awesome.
And so to add in some of the awesome, because I've attended just one, but I'll be in others. What are some of your favorite topics that you've covered so far in your conversation group?
Oof, I gotta say, like, one of the early ones we did on quarantine was about mental health, and that was a lot of fun. You know, I've always tried to kind of tackle difficult topics. More recently, especially with many of the things that were happening in the United States at the end of May and are still happening now, meaning this fight for racial equality that is long overdue. I was reminded that I wanted to take on topics that have weight, you know, topics that are going to help people to, again, see different perspectives and open their world views a little bit. So, yeah, so after that, we had a topic about police. We had a topic about the prison system. And they were just such great conversations because there's always something you don't expect. You know, somebody from Egypt having the same perspective as someone from Colombia, or somebody from Korea having so much in common with someone from the United States. And it's just such a cool thing to see. I guess I got off topic there, but we've had some really great topics.
No, well, I was going to ask you that, and you kind of alluded to it. So how do you think culture sort of made the conversations work? Because you and I are both Americans. And so, I mean, while Americans in general kind of have a foundational kind of idea or understanding of the topic you're talking about, but how did people from other places sort of receive what you were talking about? Because for some people that I've seen who've encountered it, they're confused. They're like, well, why is that even happening? What are they talking about? So how did you kind of receive that as far as culture went?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was not as difficult as it could have been because, you know, everyone likes to think that their country is unique, right? You know, you ask any Colombian, they'll tell you they have the worst government in the world. But you ask anyone in Lebanon and they'll just laugh at you because. So I think it works because maybe not at this particular moment, but in many of our lives in different parts of the world, we have shared a lot of similar experiences, or we do witness a lot of the same conflicts in society, politics, and the workplace, which is what I notice with a lot of my clients. So I think it's all I'm doing is connecting the dots, you know, and it's hard to get people to open up sometimes, but that's why I always encourage them to kind of share their personal perspective. I design my questions to, you know, get people to share their personal perspective because, you know, I can't comment on the state of race in the United States, but I can share stories of the times I've witnessed, you know, these kind of conflicts where I've witnessed racist acts in Thailand or the United States or in Colombia. And almost anyone who comes to the club can share a similar story. So as long as we keep it kind of local, as long as we don't try to be experts, which we're not, then it works, I think. And that's my job, is to facilitate that sharing of personal experience.
So with that, and it's a good point you just made. So you did it obviously because you're you, it's sort of your personality, but then it's incorporated with obviously your own personal and business goals. So what do you think are some things that you and your company English Arrow do well?
I am in the middle of a transition, so I hope I can answer you with a little more confidence in a few months. But I think making connections, you know, making everyone feel, I mean, in the club, for example, just making people feel like they can share deeply personal stories. I remember back when we were having the in-person club, we did a topic about homosexuality, about LGBT rights. And again, you know, I'm not an expert on that. Most people at the club weren't experts on that, but we had the privilege to hear these deeply personal stories from some of the participants about their own experience. So I remember one young couple came, two women, and one of them shared, well, when I came out to my parents, this is what happened. And it was just so cool that she felt like she was in a safe place to share the story. So I think in the Conversation Club, just creating that space, facilitating that space, something that I do, that we all do, you know, everyone who comes does really well.
Well, and I think you should give yourself obviously some credit, because you have to have a vision to do that. And speaking of vision, so what are your future goals? What are your future goals for your business, for sort of your endeavors with the things that you've created? What kind of goals do you have going forward? And I'm not one of those 5-year, 10-year plan people, just a sort of a general goal that, you know, makes you feel good.
Yeah. So I recently launched kind of a paid community. So I realized this club model was working so well. So I decided to launch kind of a paid version that was more targeted toward, again, those motivated professionals who I focus on. And we're just in our first month, and I've had some good feedback so far. I did a test month, actually, so second month. So my goal is to grow that community to a place where, again, people feel that same sense of security to share their personal experience, and eventually to be able to kind of step back. You know, something that happened at the club, which I haven't been able to achieve in this new community, is by the time this club was running smoothly, I could not be there and everyone would still have a great time, right? I created the expectations and the space. And so at some point, everyone knows what they show up and they know how it works. So my goal is to grow this community to a place where, you know, it can sustain me financially to pursue other activities, and where the participants feel that same sense of belonging, that same sense of security.
Well, you know, one of the finer signs of leadership is when you have led people to the point where they don't need you to actually be in the front anymore. So I give you lots of credit for the leadership that you've had there. And you kind of said it a little bit, but I wanted you to more specifically kind of say it. So what is sort of the target audience that you're looking for to help? Because what you're doing is helping. And obviously there are sayings, if you do something well, then you should get compensated for it, because your time is worth something, but they get something in return. So who is your target sort of audience or client for the things that you're doing right now?
Yeah, and there's two, but mainly it's professionals who are already working in international companies who are using English every day in their work lives. Because back when I was on the marketplace websites like iTalki, a lot of the people coming to me, you'd be shocked, right? These were people who had been living and working in the United States for 3 years and still didn't feel confident. That is the main audience that I want to reach, those people who feel like their English is holding them back from integrating in a company or advancing. And then the second group is people who, you know, have this dream of working in an international company, who want to work and live abroad, or in their own countries, but in a multinational company, but are too afraid to even go to the interview, right?
And so with that, and I think it's beautiful that's a vision, because you're giving people hope in sort of the unseen. It's a great book. If you haven't read it, definitely read it. But so what do you think English can do for someone beyond their expectations? Like, you know English, you know the English-speaking world. What do you think it could do for someone that they may not realize it can do for them?
Yeah, and I think I have to stress again, it's not just English, it's those communication skills. But what's so cool about English, and, you know, I'm sure I'm not an expert on how it got this way, but most of the clients who I help, they use English in their jobs, but not necessarily with native English speakers.
Right.
You know, I have a guy in Korea who speaks English to his Japanese colleagues, or his Thai colleagues, or his Chinese colleagues, using English. So a lot of English, you know, people who are learning English or who speak English, they get obsessed with kind of this native accent or practicing with native speakers. But what is less expected and what they soon discover is that the English speaking world is not native English speakers. There are two non-native English speakers for every native English speaker in the world. So I think that might be unexpected to a lot of people, that a lot of the English they'll be speaking is not necessarily with native speakers.
All right. So the most important part outside of you giving the background information and giving your story is, where can people find you? Because I mean, I'm going to have it included, but where can people find you? What's your preferred method of communication with people if they want to reach out to James and jump into the English arrow and go in the direction that you're going?
Yeah, I mean, they can find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to contact me now. If anyone is interested in practicing, you know, improving their business, their confident business English skills, then you can go to EnglishArrow.club, which I recently launched. So that's cool. And yeah, anyone is welcome to join us on Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. Bogota time. The more the merrier, as I like to quote.
and where can you find your book? I know it's on Amazon, but is it just Kindle, or is it, can they get the paperback? What are their options?
Yeah, if you want the paperback version, you gotta hope you're in one of the countries that has it, because international shipping at the moment is a little difficult. But yeah, it's available on Kindle. It's a digital version, and it's available in paperback in the United States, Canada, Spain, many other countries around the world.
And again, they're looking for interview in English. Get your dream job in the English speaking workplace, right?
Yes. I really wanted to make it easy to remember. So if you type interview in English, mine will be the first result.
That's brilliant. That's about communication. That's just you showing that you understand how to connect to people. So what one thing I like to do with all of the podcasts specifically is the final voice. The final voice is a period that I offer all of the contributors to say whatever it is on their heart. It doesn't have to be about what we were talking about. The topic can be on anything that that is something that they want to talk about. But I want to give you the final word, the final voice. So thank you for your contribution to the show. I hope for continued prosperity for you, and I will give you the final word.
If you want to be successful in life, I think it's important to make as many connections as possible. And whether that's in your own language or in English, English is a vehicle, right? So if you are wondering to yourself ever, why are you learning English? Remember, it's about making connections. And making connections is what will help you grow and be more successful.